We will get an update on Superstorm Sandy that hit the East Coast and beyond yesterday. And we'll ask the questions, what happened, and what's next. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, October 30th. Do you have a question or a reaction to Superstorm Sandy? We'll only be talking with our weather expert guest for the next 10 minutes or so. So if you do have a question, get it in soon at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Coming up after 7:20 or so, we will talk about the political implications of Superstorm Sandy. As you know, President Obama canceled his trip to Green Bay for today, and Mitt Romney canceled his rally in West Allis last night. We'll talk about the politics of the storm coming up in just a few minutes. Let me welcome our guest right now, Michael Morgan. He is a professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at UW-Madison. He is in Baltimore now. He is the division director for atmospheric and geospace sciences at the National Science Foundation. And he joins us from Baltimore. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So how is it there today?
Right now, it actually is pretty quiet. I think the winds outside here in Baltimore are extremely light. Right now, they're actually lighter than they are in Madison, with gust in Madison right now, I guess, around 24 miles per hour out of the north. We're actually having winds that are only about 7 miles an hour, not even gusting here in Baltimore right now. But yesterday was a totally different story.
Yeah, it was windy walking in this morning, and I wondered about that. But tell us what it was like. Tell us your firsthand account of what happened.
Okay, well, this was a rather exceptional storm. For this area, I mean, the rain started in our area late on Sunday and continued through much of yesterday. And as Sandy was making landfall in the late afternoon in southern New Jersey, that's when we began to get some of the heaviest rain. It was almost like someone had a hose pointed at a window.
Wow.
Listening to the rainfall, the winds were quite gusty. Winds gusted in the Baltimore and D.C. areas up to about 60 miles per hour. Sustained winds were around 30 miles per hour, and that continued much of the night until midnight, a little after midnight, and then things began to taper off a bit. But obviously the biggest impacts that you're going to be hearing about, I guess, in the next few days are going to be up toward the New York City area and the New Jersey coast, where they've had significant flooding of many areas there, and also the significant snow that's falling in the mountains of West Virginia. Today.
Yeah, that was it's really something. The well, let's talk a little bit about what did the landfall was near Battery Park in New York in that area?
No. The landfall was actually in pretty close to Atlantic City, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
But this gives you a sense of the scope of the storm. That's one of the most unusual, not unusual, but it's rather notable for this storm, was that the size of the wind field extended far out from the center, and so some of the very strong winds have helped to pile up water, part of the storm surge in southern New York, you know, around Long Island, along New Jersey, and certainly the Battery Park area of New York, where they had a storm surge of about 13 feet.
Right, that was like the highest storm surge I saw, but that's because the winds and the spiral of the hurricane winds did that.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're really, they're really dealing with flooding. There are even fires that broke out in New York. Last I heard, 16 lives were lost, and maybe that's going to mount with daybreak.
Right, that's unfortunate. That's going to perhaps mount. And I guess the other aspect that we talked about, some of the damage in New York and New Jersey, a lot of the rivers in the eastern United States, particularly in the Mid-Atlantic and southern New England, because of the significant rainfall ranged from about 4 inches or so in some areas up to well over close to a foot of rain. And that's all going to be draining into river basins and then heading down, toward the Chesapeake Bay area. And so I expect you're going to hear about a significant flooding along the Potomac later on in the next couple of days. As all these river basins in the east begin to drain and things subside, you're going to see talk of flooding, I think, is still the big threat for the rest of the week.
And they keep on, you know, first this was dubbed a Frankenstorm because of Halloween's proximity, I guess. But now the Weather Channel starts calling it a superstorm. This was a combination of different storms, different weather events that really did make it a monster, right?
Right, yeah. This was what people use the term hybrid storm. And the storm originated early last week as a tropical depression that formed in the Caribbean and became a hurricane as it moved past Jamaica and moved northward. At the same time, we had weather systems arriving on the west coast of the United States to help carve out what meteorologists term an upper-level trough over the eastern United States. And as Sandy moved closer to the mid-Atlantic coast, there was an interaction between Sandy and this upper trough that helped to drag it westward, make a sort of relatively sharp left turn, westward turn. And the interaction of that upper trough with the cold air in it helped to further fuel Sandy as it approached landfall. And so this was really an extraordinary combination that you don't see often. And I often tell people about this. I've been interested in weather, you know, for a significant part of my life. And, you know, I often sort of imagine what could be the dream storm to experience. Again, there's loss of life and certainly a lot of property damage. I don't want to underestimate that or brush that over. But in terms of the combination that meteorologists would like to see, this was probably, you know, one of these rare events that you kind of dream about. And we've actually had something pretty close to it happen with this storm.
Right. And now, and you mentioned the snow in West Virginia. That's because of cold air of a nor'easter?
Right. So the cold air, you know, partly associated with this upper tropospheric disturbance, this upper trough that arrived late yesterday, or during the day yesterday, in the eastern United States, that helped to bring in some of the cold air. I mean, that actually part of that cold weather passed through Madison. The cold front itself actually passed through Madison a couple of days ago, and this sort of reinforcing shot came around yesterday to help energize the storm, but put the cold air in place at elevation over West Virginia, and parts of western Maryland to produce blizzard conditions over those areas today. So it's the same storm. The principal storm, the principal mechanism is Sandy, but the combination of this added cold air and added boost of energy, if you will, that arrived yesterday helped to make this really quite an event.
Yeah, and it really was massive, too, because we are here now in Wisconsin feeling the winds. You mentioned the winds in Madison being harder than they are in Baltimore, but they're talking about voluntary evacuations of some of Pleasant Prairie, a community very close to the Lake Michigan shoreline.
Right.
And I know that they've canceled the ferry that goes across from the east coast of, like, around the Manitowoc area over to Ludington. I know that that's been canceled because of high waves, and they're talking about even gale force on Lake Michigan.
Right, that is correct. I haven't seen some of the sustained winds yet, but looking at a map right now that's valid about 6 a.m. your local time, in central part of Lake Michigan, their wind gust up to 52 miles per hour along the shore of Lake Michigan in Wisconsin. Wind gust in the low to mid 30s, 30 miles per hour. So this is really an expansive circulation. If you look at a weather map this morning, you'll see a huge swirl of clouds that exist over the eastern United States. And beyond that, you'll see winds associated with Sandy that go from central Wisconsin all the way out to just beyond Bermuda, extending from just north of Cuba all the way into southern Canada. This is a huge storm size-wise in terms of the impacts that are being felt. And those strong winds in the upper Midwest over the lakes are going to cause a lot of problems for, as you said, transportation across the lakes. People in lake side communities on both sides of the Great Lakes are going to have some significant problems with wind and wave action today.
Well, so what else do we expect today from is it now a tropical cyclone or something?
They're now calling it a post tropical storm Sandy, so it's lost a significant number of its tropical characteristics, and also the energy source where it derives its energy. Tropical cyclones, hurricanes, derive their energy from the air-sea interaction that occurs. This is more like a typical nor'easter, but on just a much larger scale. There's still some aspects of tropical cyclone activity with this, because they're banded rain structures that are developing over the mid-Atlantic today and out over the Atlantic just to the east of New Jersey. So there's going to be a lot of rain that's still going to be falling over parts of the mid-Atlantic today. But it'll be the winds as this cyclone begins to spin down and moves into further north into Pennsylvania and New York State. I think it'll be winds diminishing, still kind of gusty. I expect the winds here are going to pick up a little bit later on today. But over the Great Lakes, the winds continuing, rainfall over Pennsylvania, Maryland, Virginia, and the snow continuing probably for another day or so as you get strong winds on the western sides of the Appalachians as the air ascends and drops all of its moisture over there.
Yeah. And is there any other threat to the East Coast in terms of, I understand there's still some tidal cycles to go through that might cause more flooding?
That's correct. So when I was mentioning these spiral bands that are still developing on the eastern side of the storm, also the wind field is still out of the southeast, and that's impacting the east, southeast and east, that's impacting southern Long Island, or Long Island, the New York City area, and eastern New Jersey. So they're still going to get water piling up because of the storm, but the winds are gradually going to be diminishing, but the threat for some coastal flooding remains. One of the other aspects of this is a lot of the coast has been disrupted by the storm, significant storm surge and beach erosion. So a lot of the sand dunes and dune structures have changed, and so that can allow some more water to come in, probably further inland than would typically be because the beaches were more protected prior to the storm. But this has rearranged a lot of real estate along the East Coast.
Yeah. Well, anything else, Professor Morgan, in terms of, I don't know, what to expect from the storm, or for that matter, I suspect this will be studied for some time to come.
Oh, this will definitely be a storm that there'll be a number of papers coming out in the next few years to look at all aspects of this storm. And I also imagine for young folks that are interested, had an interest in the atmospheric sciences, particularly those that lived in the East that experienced this, you'll see new generations of young meteorologists that are going to be born from this event because of the just the enormity of it and the sort of exciting factor of it. And one last thing is, there have been power outages certainly in the New York City area, but one of the interesting things, we were expecting more significant widespread power outages here in the East, particularly in the Maryland and Virginia area. And I haven't seen maps fully this morning, but I get a sense that they were much more reduced than we were expecting. Partly because we had very strong winds, but I think we had storms earlier this summer that probably knocked down all the easy-to-break-down branches. So,
That's one good thing, I guess.
That's one good thing, I guess, from this. We'll see how things advance today with the winds picking up a little bit. But I think this has just been an incredible event, and people should say, if you have relatives in the East, contact them. But I think things are going to begin to gradually improve over the next day or so.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Okay, thank you so much.
Michael Morgan, Professor of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison. He is in Baltimore, Maryland. Now he is serving as Division Director for the Atmospheric and Geospace Sciences at the National Science Foundation, giving us his account of Superstorm Sandy and what's next. We're going to talk about the political implications of Superstorm Sandy in just a moment. Quick check of our weather for today. It's going to be mostly sunny in western Wisconsin today with more clouds and windy in the east. Highs will be in the 40s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Of course, our thoughts, our best wishes are with all of those who have been affected by Superstorm Sandy. We just heard an update on the weather impact from a UW-Madison meteorology professor. Now we are going to talk about the political impact of the storm, and it could be considerable. Well, let's see what our guest thinks. He is Mordecai Lee, a professor of governmental affairs at UW-Milwaukee. Good morning, Mordecai.
Good morning, Joy.
So, what do you think? Do you think the presidential campaign is at a standstill now?
Probably the best way to assess what's going on is to say nobody knows nothing. In other words, anything could be happening as we speak, and anything could happen over the next 48 or 72 hours. People might remember the 1980 election, that going in, this was President Carter running for re-election and Ronald Reagan challenging him, and the race was pretty much competitive going into the last week, and then on the last weekend, it was like all the undecideds had a conference call, and the bottom dropped out, as it turned out, for President Carter, and Ronald Reagan won overwhelmingly. And the reason I mention that is not to predict what will be happening in this race, but to make sure to emphasize that people react to events, people react to developments, and towards the last weekend, those undecideds or those soft leaning people come to a decision. And so what's likely to happen is that over the next 72 hours, I think voters will be judging how the president handles this crisis. And after all, there is a tendency, I think, by the national media that no matter what problem happens, if somebody looks at somebody cross-eyed down in, let's say, Newark, then it's the president's fault. Mm-hmm. And so there's the question of the competence of how the federal government is responding to this. Everybody will be comparing it, of course, to Katrina. And then they'll be judging Governor Romney. Did he seem to be handling things in with calm leadership and an understanding of what was important, or did he seem to be making partisan hay over it or disregarding suffering? And so anything could happen over the next 72 hours.
Well, Mitt Romney did cancel his Milwaukee area campaign event yesterday. He was supposed to have a rally in West Allis. He canceled it after President Obama canceled his campaign appearances, including his trip to Green Bay, which was scheduled for today. We can understand the president saying, hey, I got to monitor what's going on with Superstorm Sandy. I can't be running around campaigning. Why do you suppose Mitt Romney canceled his appearance, though?
Well, I think the best comparison is if we go back to 4 years ago, when the bottom dropped out of the stock market, we had Senator McCain, who, of course, was not president. He was running to succeed George W. Bush, suspended his campaign, saying that there was a national emergency and he was returning to Washington. Mr. Obama, Senator Obama at the time, did not suspend his campaign, but they both met in the White House when there was a kind of a super summit meeting on deciding policies. And I think both men were then judged, how do they conduct themselves leading up to this White House event? How do they conduct themselves at the event? And did they seem to be putting the interests of the country first? And so the judgments about Mr. Romney will be similar to that. It's not just judgments about how the president handles his current responsibilities, but also what is Governor Romney hinting about the kind of president he'd be given this emergency situation.
Mm-hmm. So he looks like he's not politicizing an event if he also puts his campaign appearances on hold.
Exactly. And then the interesting issue that happens is a kind of a what's next. In other words, when is it that normalcy returns? When is it that, let's say, Governor Romney resumes campaigning? When is it that the president resumes campaigning? How do they transition from no campaigning to campaigning? These are sort of delicate matters. I guess you could call them high risk, high reward. In political terms, given that the race is essentially a dead heat in these swing states, these battleground states, it's sort of like walking on razor blades. You know, if you make it across, it's a huge accomplishment with huge benefits, but it's really easy to hurt yourself. And so the tone they take, the things they say, the accusations they make, the blame game that might begin unfolding within hours of when we speak, that will all affect the election. I guess the summary would be to say that's why we still hold elections, because of, you know, the fancy word contingency. Unpredictable things can happen, and those unpredictable things can influence how people vote, or if they will vote. And so I think the election is up for grabs, and people will be watching them very closely for the next few days.
So President Obama probably should not have a picture of himself taken from Air Force One looking out the window.
Yeah, you know, Hurricane Katrina was a textbook case about how not to handle things. And yeah, we have to remember that we live in an era where, I guess what you call optics, how things look, are as important as the substance. After all, if President Bush had looked out the window at the Katrina damage or had been on the ground and then in a helicopter and seen the damage, the optics would have been different, but the actual federal reaction would not have been different. Mm-hmm. Here we've got a situation where there was a hurricane that hit New Orleans last Labor Day, and the general media consensus was that the federal government worked well with local governments and that they tried to mitigate about as well as one can do in these situations. And So, for example, when you had utilities saying, well, it might take us a week to restore power to some people, nobody said, well, that's the president's fault. And people understood that some things are the federal government's responsibility and some aren't. And so I guess for the next couple of days, this is going to be when all Americans educate themselves about public administration. How fast can the government respond? What are realistic expectations? And understanding that when you have these massive events, sometimes government is a bit of a lumbering giant. And to what extent is the lumbering giant understandable and expectable, and to what extent is it managerial incompetence?
We have just a minute or so before we take our news break. The fact that President Obama and Governor Romney had planned on being in Wisconsin this week, just a week before the election, and not to mention vice presidential candidates as well, that means that they believe that Wisconsin's undecideds are still in play.
There's no doubt about it. It's amazing how short the list is getting in terms of the swing states. And in fact, you're right, Joy. The way to understand what campaigns are thinking is to see what they're doing and then sort of reverse logic it back to where the decision was made. If they're spending more money on Wisconsin TV stations, if they're trying to have events in Wisconsin for themselves and for their surrogates and for, I guess, what you call the B list, that means they think Wisconsin is still in play. And if I had to make a prediction, they'll be back before next Tuesday.
We'll talk more about that after we check news. And we will welcome your thoughts and questions about the presidential campaign. It's currently on hold to some extent because of Superstorm Sandy, talking about the political implications of this natural disaster, and welcoming your thoughts and questions for our guest, Mordecai Lee, who is a professor of governmental affairs at UW-Milwaukee, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It is 7:37 on this Tuesday, October 30th. We are talking with Mordecai Lee, a professor of governmental affairs from UW-Milwaukee, about the political impact of Superstorm Sandy. And we are welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. As you know, President Obama canceled his trip to Green Bay for today. Mitt Romney canceled his rally in West Allis yesterday. We did hear news, though, that former President Clinton will someday be replacing, I guess, President Obama's trip to Wisconsin. I'm wondering, Mordecai, if, as you mentioned, you thought that we would see the candidates back in Wisconsin before Election Day. We might see former President Clinton even before that.
Right. The political question becomes, how to use surrogates in states that are not affected by the storm in a way that doesn't look unseemly? And evidently, there were a couple of campaign events yesterday in Ohio. I believe former President Clinton spoke at that one, although that was early in the day. When he comes to Wisconsin, sort of when both campaigns rev up, even without sort of their principles still abstaining from campaigning, is a political question. What is deemed okay and what is deemed not okay? And, there's no textbook for this. There's really no way to know how the public might react. And sometimes in politics, one is lucky. Sometimes one is unlucky. Sometimes you read things right, you read things wrong. And so the decision you mentioned, Joy, about when will former President Clinton appear in Wisconsin is a key decision by the campaign.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have lots of callers, so let's see what Ted in Beloit has to say. Hello, Ted.
Hello, ma'am. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a former embassy guard for the embassies in the Middle East. What I don't understand is why the left is not discussing how President Obama reacted to Benghazi. He went on a campaign trail the day after or that day, I believe. I keep getting them screwed up, but then they're going to judge him on how he reacts to the storm. What about the governors of the state? I believe they're a little bit more responsible than how Obama's reacting to this.
All right. So about that?
It's true. All of us come out of high school civics, and we think that our form of government in America is a kind of a layer cake. You know, there's the federal government for national things. There's the state government, as Todd mentioned, their role in states. And then there's local government. Actually, it's not really a layer cake where we can clearly say this is so-and-so's responsibility. I guess the analogy is more like a marble cake. You know, it's all sort of mixed up. So Ted is right that governors are going to be playing a major role in the next 72 hours in terms of dealing with the storm. Mayors will be, but the federal government as well. And so that brings in the role of the president.
Yeah, and we just heard in state news that it's the president who declares major disaster areas, and President Obama declared a major disaster area for New York and Long Island, which makes federal funding available to people in the area.
Exactly. There's a huge amount of discretionary authority that Congress over the generations has given to presidents that says, we in Congress, we move too slowly. We're going to give presidents the right to unilaterally do X. And it's just about in every policy area. And so, indeed, he had to sign a document to make that major declaration for certain laws to kick in and for certain federal aid and assistance to kick in.
But as we talked just a bit about in our first segment, I heard that a president, fairly or unfairly, is held accountable if the recovery effort is messed up. We blame the president often, and if he looks presidential and things go smoothly, we pat him on the back.
Yeah, I guess it's part of American culture that we love the blame game. I mean, you can go to any kindergarten schoolyard. I didn't do that. No, I wasn't in charge of that. And the same thing happens in politics. What is reasonable for us to say that this is the president's fault, and what is unreasonable? And so, as we talked before the break, the optics about President Bush watching Katrina damage from an airplane as he was flying over was as powerful a political impact as had he been there and what he was doing. And so I think it's fair for us to try to be tempered and say what's reasonable to expect of the federal government as led by the president and what is unreasonable. But generally speaking, in America, we say that whatever happens on a president's watch is sort of his responsibility, whether he could control it or not. And in fact, I think if this election ends up being a referendum on the economy, it'll be, even though the president didn't cause the stock market crash and the housing crash, did he handle it well or did he not handle it well?
Well, let me take another call. Carrie in Augusta. I had another question on that, but Carrie in Augusta has a better question. Sure. Right, Carrie?
Yeah, good morning. One quick comment. I was watching CNN this morning, and Governor Chris Christie, who we all know is a pretty outspoken conservative governor from New Jersey, had nothing but positive comment to say about President Obama. I kept thinking he's making a commercial here on how he's handling this. Anyway, my question is, Governor Romney in the primary debates talked about cutting FEMA, that department, and I wonder how that is going to come back and affect this week and the conversation after, you know, the fallout from this storm, because the governor of Delaware, who was interviewed this morning, said there's no way they could handle the storm's repercussions without FEMA.
Role of government.
I think that's a great point, and it shows you how dynamic politics are, that apparently, based on what Kerry said, Governor Romney had said much early in the year that he wanted to cut the federal budget, including FEMA. And now, for all we know, that sort of 10-second soundbite might come back to haunt him. On the other hand, if the federal government does not handle things well, then Governor Romney would be able to say, see, I told you there are problems there. They're just throwing money at problems. They don't know how to solve problems. So politics is a really high-wire act, and it depends on I guess being fleet-footed. A good politician is adaptable and realizes when, in a sense, reality has changed. And I think what we're undergoing literally at this moment is that the national political race for president is changing. We just don't know in what direction it's changing.
The question I was going to ask was now, at least for now, most national media attention is on the storm and its aftermath and its cleanup. And it's not on other issues that the candidates want to talk about on the campaign. So that's got to have an impact, too.
Well, Joy, it's possible that that'll have an impact. In fact, some people talk about how, based on this weather event, that it freezes the presidential race in place, and because, in part, the news media is not talking about it. But we have to remember that there are lots of other parts of the campaign that are still going on. There are grassroots campaigning going on. There are ads on the radio. There are ads on TV. The campaigns are going full bore without the two principals. And so lots of stuff is happening politically. It's just that the national media is temporarily not paying attention to it.
Mm-hmm. Linda in Monroe is with us. Hello, Linda.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Mr. Lee.
Mordecai.
I was watching PBS's Frontline last week called Climate of Doubt, and in there it said that the scientists, 98% of the scientists agreed that we do have global warming, and 2% said we didn't, and the 2% tend to lean Republican. And they asked one Republican, well, what would you do if you were wrong? And he said, well, then I'd say I was sorry. But that's really too late. And this one legislator, due to the fact that he believed in global warming, he's a Republican, and they voted him out in the primary by a score of 79-21%. And I think we do have global warming. And what's your opinion?
Well, is that going to be an issue on the campaign trail?
Well, I think if there is going to be an issue, as these things sort of mutate, is it possible that by Friday we're going to be talking about global warming, that this is a storm of unprecedented proportions? Is this related to a global climate change, and therefore who's on the right side of the issue? But I'd really prefer to just emphasize briefly Linda's earlier point, and that's that the national news media doesn't like to take sides. And so if 98% of scientists say one thing and 2% say the other, the way it comes across in stories is, here's one side of the story, here's the other side of the story, we're not taking sides. And you would expect me as a professor that I do believe in science, and I do believe that if 98% of my colleagues agree on something, that it probably is right. Yes, that's where I would come down on it.
Our guest is Mordecai Lee. He's a professor of governmental affairs at UW-Milwaukee, and we're talking about the political implications of Superstorm Sandy and what it means for the presidential race and politics. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. It's going to be mostly sunny in western Wisconsin today. It's going to be cloudy and windy in the east with highs in the 40s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up after 8 o'clock, it's another edition of On Your Money. Certified financial planner Kevin McKinley will be in with information and advice on your money. We are talking about Superstorm Sandy during this segment, talking about its political ramifications and what it might mean for the presidential election 1 week from today. Boy, time flies. We have, as our guest, Mordecai Lee, professor of governmental affairs at UW-Milwaukee. Have you stepped outside at all, Mordecai? Is it windy out in Milwaukee?
I'm still in my pajamas, I'm embarrassed to say.
That's all right. So don't step outside then, okay? I just hear that there are it's going to be very windy.
Right.
Lake Michigan is going to have big, big waves. So certainly be careful around there. Gary from Iron River emails, I heard that Bill Clinton will be in Duluth, Minnesota today, campaigning for President Obama. Can you, Mordecai, comment on this? Given the relatively small size of Duluth, does this mean the Obama campaign fears they may lose Minnesota?
My guess to Gary would be that even though the Romney campaign is hinting that they'd like to campaign in Minnesota and try to turn it into a battleground state, that Minnesota is not as much a battleground state as Wisconsin. The logic of President Clinton going to the Duluth media market is because it covers northwestern Wisconsin. It covers Superior in that area. And it's interesting in terms of population trends in Wisconsin that in a lot of the lower population counties, the most rural of the counties, there are a lot more swing voters. And so, for example, we're seeing a great amount of emphasis in northeast Wisconsin in the La Crosse area, and now, based on Gary's comment, in the Superior media market, that, you know, you go fishing where the fish are. And if the persuadable voters in Wisconsin are in these sort of low-density population counties, that's why they're campaigning there.
Yeah. I have here from a Minnesota newspaper, with a massive storm out east throwing the two presidential candidates to the sidelines, former President Bill Clinton was planning to make the case for Democrat Barack Obama's reelection in two Minnesota stops. He will be visiting college campuses in Minneapolis and Duluth as a get-out-the-vote effort.
And what I would add to that, Joy, is that also the Minneapolis media market partly covers Wisconsin, up near Hudson. And so even if Minnesota is not that much of a swing state, recruiting volunteers to cross the border to help or just being on TV in those Wisconsin areas would be part of a campaign strategy.
Yeah. You know, I also heard that there was going to be, you know, this is going to have obviously a massive economic impact in terms of the destruction and I suppose the repair of the destruction. But is that going to affect the election at all?
You know, here we are. It's the 30th of October. In other words, the month is just about to end. Mm-hmm. And on Friday, the U.S. Department of Labor is going to be releasing what is really the marquee economic statistic, the unemployment rate. It seems to me that it's quite clear that any field work of data collection that would be occurring in advance of the Friday decision would not be affected by Sandy. And so I suspect that the media, the economic impact, and you're right, Joy, these things are enormously costly. Just thinking about what they have to do, for example, in Manhattan and Atlantic City right now, that those will not become apparent in terms of affecting the macro economy, the national economy, until after Tuesday's election.
And there was, at least I heard some speculation that maybe the unemployment numbers would be delayed, but you're saying you don't see any reason why that would have to be.
I tend to think not. It's true that the federal government was closed yesterday in Washington, D.C., and I believe is closed today. But by Friday, they should be up and running.
Back to the phones. Trina in Madison is with us. Hello.
Hi. Since we're talking about the storm, I guess the only comment I have is I understand why the president shortened his visit, but I guess I don't understand why Romney did other than, I don't know, to appear that he is as caring, because he stopped his campaigning as well.
Yeah, we touched on this in our first segment. It would look unseemly if he was campaigning while the president was monitoring the damage.
Exactly. That to convey what kind of president one would want to be, you demonstrate that by your behavior as a candidate for president. And especially in times of national emergency, we as Americans expect all of our fellow citizens to set aside partisan bickering and come together to help solve a national crisis. So that would be the logic of why he canceled his campaign event that was going to be at the State Fair in West Dallas.
I did see, I think it was more of an opinion piece, but it was that this was probably worse news for Mitt Romney in that it does disrupt his, as the headline said, his last-minute attempt to win Wisconsin. Would you buy that?
No, I wouldn't. I think the polls, not just in a battleground state like Wisconsin, but in some of the other states like Ohio, showed that those states could go either way. By late in the week, I'm positive that Mr. Romney will be campaigning, and I'm guessing that the president will be campaigning towards the end of the week. And so, yes, there could be a partisan line of thinking that somehow the suspension of campaigning disrupts momentum disrupts the big Mo, as they used to say. But that's not necessarily the case. I think Americans will pick up where they left off.
Next, we go to Charlie in Boston. Hello, Charlie.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm not really happy with the great storm, but I'm glad it slowed down the horse and pony show that's going on with the campaign. I've been listening to campaigns for 40 years, and the United States and our institutions have put out many wonderful debaters. I would love to see our institutions and colleges put out a wonderful president instead of a great debater, which we've had for years. So I'd like to see some action on how anything gets handled. Thank you for taking my call.
Well, we're getting to the heart of what presidents actually do every day, and that's that they're public administrators. They're, in a sense, civil servant number one, and their job is to run the executive branch of the federal government. And yes, there are a lot of things that presidents do that are sort of symbolic, that are image-making, that are the bully pulpit, but actually his job, or someday her job, is to run the government. And so in that respect, it will be fair for us to say, is the president doing a good job in the face of this kind of crisis?
Now let's. I'm going to take John in Richland Center next. Hello, John.
Hi. Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Mordecai.
Hi.
Hi. I was the former chief inspector of the city of La Crosse, and under my watch, I had to see eight men drowning to death, and I put a kibosh on it. There hasn't been a drowning death since 2006. Well, I think the incumbent President Obama is doing a good job with Sandy. He handled Isaac. An act of God is nothing an administrator can do but rely on his people like FEMA.
All right, so your point is that you just think the president has done a good job in this role.
Yes, and going back to Katrina, that was built below sea level, so there was nothing.
Right, yeah. All right, John, thanks very much. So here's one caller anyway, giving President Obama some credit.
Right, and I think we have to give it a little bit of time, because what happens in the next 72 hours, in other words, the reaction to the problem, is how I think the national news media will give its verdict, and then therefore what the new conventional wisdom will be by the time we get to the weekend. I suspect that that things are going okay. This is really, really tough. But John's point, I think, is important, and that's that because New Orleans was below sea level, the damage and the ongoing damage after the hurricane was still significant.
All right. Well, we just have a minute to go. You suspect campaigning will pick up once again, maybe in a day or two?
I think so, and I think they'll be back in Wisconsin. And if any of your listeners are still undecided, if there are Wisconsinites who don't know how to vote, I think this is a perfect opportunity for them to take a second look at both candidates. How are both candidates handling this national crisis? Do they like how they're behaving? Do they dislike how they're behaving? Can they envision this person as president for the next 4 years? You know, we're getting to the bottom line of democracy, and I guess that's why I love elections.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
Mordecai Lee, Professor of Governmental Affairs at UW-Milwaukee. And also thanks to Michael Morgan from the UW Professor of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison for being with us earlier in our last half hour. Thanks to Rob Ferret, to Amanda Magnus, and to Cynthia Schuster for producing this hour, and thank you for listening. You know, we will be releasing the Wisconsin Public Radio St. Norbert College Survey Center poll probably on Thursday of this week. So you'll hear it in the news, but we'll talk about it on Friday morning from 6 until 8. We're asking who you prefer for president and for U.S. Senate, among other things. That's the Wisconsin Public Radio St. Norbert College survey coming out on Thursday and Friday of this week. This is the Ideas Network.